Tonight's episode of Colors of the Dark is brought to you by the new book Tapeworm by A.P. Thayer. Are you ready for a novel that has body horror, creatures, and is Lovecraftian? Then Tapeworm by A.P. Thayer is for you. A mesmerizing mix of subgenres, Tapeworm has been named a top read for the summer by Fangoria. It takes you on an annual retreat with a group of friends in California desert town of Superstition. When they enter the local welcoming committee, things take a seductive turn, but the price is higher than any of them could ever imagine. The group bonding is taken to a whole new level. Critics call Tapeworm masterful and say it left me wounded, reeling, and repelled, and I absolutely adore it. Don't miss Tapeworm by A.P. Thayer. Newly published by Evil Twin, Tapeworm is available where books are sold in hardcover, ebook, and audio. Get your copy today. Welcome to Colors of the Dark. This is our first regular show back since the start of summer. I'm your co-host, Rebecca McKendry, and with me is Elric Kane. How you doing?
Is it ever regular with us?
Kind of. I don't know. The weeks never are. We always talk about how we need to wait until like things settle down, and they never do.
They especially don't now. and then we're going to be like, oh my God, it's October in like 1 month. Oh my God, I just want it to cool down. All I want is sweater weather. I'm dreaming of sweater weather.
You know, I was having this discussion earlier today that, and then it led to a lot of Googling where I was saying, like, it's going to reach a point where I eventually get really sick of, like, the 109 degree LA heat that we now have. Yeah. And I'm going to be like, I'm leaving LA. I'm going somewhere. And then I was like, where am I going to go? And then I Googled Denver and it was like 101. And then I looked in Portland and it was like 95. And the answer is nowhere. Austin was like in the hundreds. I'm not going fucking anywhere because it's all on fire.
Global warming. Yes. That is sad to hear about. I would have thought Colorado would have had some cool spots, but
yeah,
with the elevation, but yeah, it's just too hot right now. And so,
oh my God. Yeah.
But also, you know, it will come October. Like I saw that they're offering the pumpkin spice latte on my drive to work this morning. And I resisted because I was like, I can't do that in August. I have got to wait.
Oh my God,
I know I need a cool day where I feel like, oh good, now it's the time. We're headed to Halloween time.
As you know, I can't talk about it yet. I'm hoping they announce it soon so I can talk about it. But I've been working on a project that's got a lot to do with kind of the history of haunted attractions and Halloween in America. And I literally wrote a piece today about the history of pumpkin spice. It goes all the way back to like the 1300s. Like it was
interesting.
I was expecting it to be like, yeah, it started with Starbucks in like 2008. And no, it's like crazy history.
Well, you're filling our did you know for the day because we're not doing that till next show because we didn't have time this week.
Well, it's definitely, I'm not going to go any more into it, but I definitely spent my week kind of researching some crazy stuff like mumming and guising, which deserves a Google, or you can just wait for the book to come out.
Sex thing?
Not a sex thing.
Mumming and guising sounds very much like a sex thing.
Sounds very much like, you know, the old M&G.
Yeah.
No, it's not a sex thing. But yeah, so there was a lot of like little interesting sidebars that I've gotten to research for this. And I'm on a second project right now that I'm having to research what I'm going to call rural horrors. We'll just call them outdoor horrors in a very post Friday the 13th style. So one of my watches tonight, it's Demon Wind. Exactly.
I don't even remember the story. I just remember the VHS cover. And then I remember like a woman in a wedding dress and then turns into a monster or something. That's my memories of Demon Wind
That's pretty much all you need. But I'll get into that in a sec.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I'm excited because Halloween season's coming up and Universal Halloween Horror Nights and the Los Angeles Hayride. And actually, that's why I was Googling Denver is I'm heading to Denver in a couple of weeks to go to one of the haunts there. But I also get to go to Meow Wolf while I'm there. And that's cool.
I went to that one and it was really good. Really good. And Denver is really cool. It's Boulder. That's got Sundance now. So Sundance.
Yeah.
From here on is going to, or at least in the temporary here on, is going to be in Boulder. And so I think that's an exciting change too. So.
Yeah.
A change of the winds. But yes, it's still hot, so we're still very much in summer. And we have some, cooling off for summer. I watched the ultimate cool movie to cool off in summer in a movie theater. And that is Eli Roth's Ice Cream Man.
Oh my God, you went to see it in the theater.
By myself.
I'm impressed because this sounds kind of cathartic for you. Like, what was your mood this day? This is basically like the male equivalent of getting bangs cut, I feel like.
Okay, so the only good thing about having the summer, I've had a job where I go in at noon for 2 hours, and then there's 6 hours of waiting for the next part of the job to begin. And so it's basically the worst schedule on the planet. But because there's nothing else to do, I have gone to a movie every single time. Because movies, I wouldn't normally just, I've got a bunch of hours. I'm down by the Chinese man theaters, so I'm like, what's playing today? And I saw the Invitation, which is like the best film I saw this year. Very funny. And other movies, but Ice Cream Man, I decided. I heard all the stuff about it first. It'd been out for a few weeks. I didn't see it when it came out. I thought Thanksgiving was actually quite fun. It didn't completely work for me, but I was very excited at the prospect of a sequel of it because I think a sequel would have been really fun.
You've liked a couple of his films, like Knock Knock. I remember
I like
being
the first
one.
half of Knock Knock.
Yeah.
That's like very specifically the first half. Second half, but I love the setup of that, and I liked Hostel 2. I think Hostel 2 is a very well-made
Oh, I
movie.
like Hostel too.
Yeah, his
What's
best made, I think.
I like Eli Roth's kids' films. Like he did House of the Clocks and Its Walls. It's
I never saw it.
great. Yeah, I like his kids' movies. When he does kind of the bigger IPs. But yeah, okay. So back to Ice Cream Man.
Well, clearly, I mean, look, it's no secret. Anyone could tell that he started this company, and it's all about IP and owning your IP, and that's why we don't have a Thanksgiving sequel because he didn't own Thanksgiving; somebody else does. And so, this is very much chasing Terrifier, and like in the history of movies, when we're chasing a trend that just started, it just never works. Like all the, I'm looking forward to all the Obsession ripoffs that we're going to get soon because that will be fun in the same way Scream, created so many different interesting films after that, lesser films, but still fun. I look forward to it. But this was just so transparently what it is. And then Ice Cream Man, also you're taking a title of a horror film that already exists, which is a little confusing. But I didn't hear anything good really. So I was like, okay. And obviously there's a lot of talk about the AI. The AI was the least egregious thing then about the movie. And I'm totally anti-AI. Like, not, it's not a line for me. I'm just like not interested. But that didn't bother me. It was like a little animation. I'm like, okay, whatever, in the middle of this movie. There's stuff about it that, on one hand, it wasn't like as I'm sitting. So I went by myself in a theater where I was the only person right up until the second it started. And then somebody came in who felt like it might be, if I'm ever going to die in a movie theater, oh, it's this person. Like the person was like wearing a hoodie, talking to themselves, muttering under their breath. They had a bag and they kept going in it. And I spent a quarter of the movie just eyeballing them when the kills were happening and going, is this why this person's in this theater? Are they just like gonna? I mean, I'm not even joking. It was on my mind, which is never in the history of going to a movie have I thought that way. So it was a little disconcerting.
Wow, you've never been a female alone on the subway
But this is
before.
true. This is true. Male privilege with my movie going experience is a definite thing. So it was a little disconcerting. The first 20 minutes, it's not good, but it's kind of fun. And the one thing I'll say for Eli Roth is that he does stick to practical gore. And not a lot of people go, and so they are going all in. There's an early kill where a little girl, obviously, people probably know the basic idea, which is like this ice cream man rolls into town, everyone starts eating the ice cream, and all the kids who are eating are now like mind controlled. And one kid is lactose intolerant, of course, so he doesn't eat the ice cream. Everyone else is getting infected. And this one little girl that night, when she hears the ice cream tune from the truck, she like just starts sawing off the head of one of her parents in a bed, and it's shot. It reminded me a bit of Nightmare, the damaged mind, that really video nasty from like the early 80s. It was that kind of gore. I almost felt like he's referencing it even. And it really was a moment where I was like, ooh, like this is mean. This is kind of straight. But then everything after that's so sunny and kind of silly and very, everything's a wide shot. Everything's shot in broad daylight. When you have that many kids, good luck controlling performances because there's like 20 kids at all times. And it just seems like the script. After about the first 20 minutes, like just it felt like somebody just wrote it in a minute, and it just there's nothing really there as it goes, and it's definitely disappointing. But I will say, like all horror movies that are about the gore, there's that little element of me that even though this isn't a good movie, I wasn't mad that I watched it, and I was like, this is not as bad in a way that as I thought because I still am watching it in the middle of a daytime, seeing someone sawing someone up and going and in a fun, funny, crazy kind of way. And so it's definitely not a recommend. And I think it's definitely one of his worst movies. But on the other token, it's kind of like if this was 19, My first thought was, if this was 1985 and this film, exact film, take the exact movie, and it was shot on film, we'd probably be rediscovering it now and talking it up. Like, and if it wasn't Eli Roth, who obviously is in a moment where it's easy to kind of
If it was
hate
a
on.
Girdler, we would have been in.
Yeah, if this was just kind of a lost, oh man, this is a one and done director, we got to check it out. So I always, you know, recency bias being what it is, but it's, you know, if it, you know, you're not gonna need to see it. It's a little annoying by the end.
You know, I was a fan, still am, of the Clint Howard one. Like, that was definitely like came out in the 90s, and I was a big fan of it, and it was just
Imagine if he got a
fun and
cameo in this.
campy.
If Clint had a cameo in this, that would have been a great move by
I
Eli.
feel like then they would have had to pay for more IP. Like, there's
Yeah.
been enough ice cream. Like, there's a really successful comic book line called The Ice Cream Man, which is a vastly different premise. He's kind of like a wish fulfiller, like demon. But, you know, there's been enough other things called Ice Cream Man that I feel like if the plot's different from that original Ice Clint Howard, you could separate the two. But that said, you know, I was kind of sad when I heard that it was not going to be a remake and that Clint Howard wasn't in it. But that's okay because we got Clint Howard in Buddy, which we're going to talk about in a little bit.
Well, yeah, and I don't know if we're probably not going to review Buddy because we're talking the director, but I was going to say that bring the comparison. They have a lot of similarities in terms of like horrible things happening
Kids.
to kids, kid performances. The difference is Casper's film, the performances are really excellent from the kids and the execution's at a really high end. So it's kind of like, and it's still, you know, a lot of daylight and a lot of that, but it's kind of showing up Ice Cream Man, I've got to say. So.
So we'll talk about Buddy in a sec because we've got Casper Kelly, the director, on the show tonight. But I will say, go see that one in a theater. It was just a trip. I had a lot of fun with it. But I will take you to the one that I watched in the theater. I went to see End of Oak Street. Did you watch this one?
I think I'm going to see it this weekend because I so don't give me the, I know there's a big spoiler in it, so that's the only
Oh,
thing I
yeah.
don't want. But I know the setup and I'm excited to see it.
Okay. So this is the new film by David Robert Mitchell, who directed It Follows, which most people don't realize that this is like his follow-up film. It is.
Well, he had a follow-up
Of that one. You know, I
a
didn't
good cult
hate
movie.
that.
No, it's a
I
good
did
cult
not
movie.
hate that movie. It got so much flack, but what was it called? Boy, can't I remember the name. It's not Under the Silver
Yeah, Under the Silver
Under the
Lake.
Silver Lake. Thank you. I mean, I did not hate that movie.
No,
It
it's interesting.
definitely took me a while. The first watch of it was pretty knee-jerk of like, what the fuck was that? But then
Very
after a
long.
while, I started warming up to it. It took me two watches to get to the end. So this is his next movie, which definitely coming off It Follows and definitely after Under the Silver Lake, this feels like a full left field. This feels more like something like Spielberg, like
Amblin. I've been
that.
hearing it's
Yeah,
like an Amblin film, what
it's a
that
total
is.
Amblin film. That's definitely it. It has gore. It definitely doesn't pull any punches on the gore, but at the same time, it's a family movie. It really is, with dinosaurs. So the setup of it, and again, I took my kids. Like, I took everybody, like Strummer, who's 10, and Mars, 13. Like, we all went as a family on opening night, because my kids, I don't know if you remember this from when they were little, they're big dinosaur
Oh yeah,
fans.
no, for sure.
So we see everything with dinosaurs in it, opening night. So this was big and fun and cost 90 million, and I hope they're making their money back. It's set in 1982, and Anne Hathaway and Ewan McGregor are playing a married couple with two kids, but their marriage is like totally on the fritz. Like, she hates being a homemaker. She just wants to be a novelist, but she can never get away to go write her novel, and she feels like she has to sneak it. And Ewan McGregor has been out of work for a really long time, and he's working as a pizza delivery guy, but he's in his 40s, and she's really embarrassed about it and doesn't want anybody to know that he's delivering pizzas. And while all this family drama is happening, weird plants start appearing around the neighborhood. And then one night, there is a giant flash, and a portion of the neighborhood, like literally a giant circle of like 20 blocks, gets teleported back to prehistoric times, back to the age of the dinosaurs. And they explain it as wormholes. Okay, cool. Let's go with that. So they are completely cut off. They are now in prehistoric times. So no water, no power. They are literally in a giant prehistoric land full of dinosaurs. And so, of course, dinosaurs gradually start working their way into the neighborhood, and there's nowhere they can go. There's nothing they can do. And, so it's them trying to figure out how to survive, how to fight the dinosaurs, you know, which dinosaurs are going to kill them, which ones aren't. It's a lot of brutality. It definitely gets gory. It really does feel like an Amblin film. But actually, now that I'm thinking about it, it falls like in a Jurassic Park line level of gore. Like it definitely has dinosaur, there's deaths at the hands of the dinosaurs, but it's nothing so much so that I don't think it would have been in a Jurassic Park film. It does have one jaw drop twist moment where the whole audience gasp all at once. Like I can't remember have been in a theater and have heard that before.
I've been hearing online. That's why I was like, I gotta see it before it's ruined.
Yeah, it's just one moment, and it was, I mean, like it just gasped every single person in the theater. It's gotten a lot of online flack about the ending because if you really start thinking, like really start thinking hard about the timelines and how it works and how they get back to their time, it's got some, kind of timeline issues with it. And so I've been seeing it get a lot of hate online as people like hyper-analyze timeline theory and multiverse and how things work if you go back and try to save your former self. Just don't overthink it, y'all. Just don't
Unlike a
overthink
bolt of lightning hitting the clock tower to power your supercar, which is
it.
which we all accepted as no problem at all.
Yeah, this one, when I'm seeing people on Letterboxd like break down different timelines and how it works and how the wormholes work, I'm like, just shut the fuck up. There's dinosaurs and let's just enjoy it. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. My kids loved it. So,
That's
yeah, it
exciting
was a
because I
lot of
feel
fun.
like he was kind of put in a director's jail after Silver Lake because it was obviously a big swing and then it didn't do anything. But then to come back with this, and I think it did well, it did, at least on the first weekend.
I think it made, I checked this morning because I was curious about the budget. And so the budget's like 90 million, and I think it's at 98 million so
In
far.
America
So
or internationally?
I'm not sure. This is like, yeah, just general precursory. So,
But
yeah.
regardless, his next movie is It Follows Back or whatever. So the sequel is underway. I think they started shooting Micah Monroe with him. So it is, that we're talking, it's rare that we get the original director returning about a decade after the original. That's exactly what I would want, like for that film. So
I'm intrigued to see if the budget changes anything because they did that first. It Follows. It was not a low budget film. I think
Yeah, it
that felt
wasn't cheap. It
like
felt bigger,
7 to 8 million.
maybe,
But I'm curious if now that he's got this under his belt, are they going to say like, let's do 25 million on the sequel and how it changes it? So I'm
And also just
intrigued.
the age of the characters. I mean, that was very much about young people having sex, and now if Micah's in it, she's probably in her early 30s. Very different. So anyway, excited that he's back into that lane. So I will definitely have to check that out. I was quite a fan of Little Bites from came out same time as my film, like kind of same within the same couple weeks, and I thought it was really well done. And the new film by Spider-One is called Big Baby, and when we were at the convention
We were
and
at Midsummer. They had Big Baby walking around.
Some people walking around, and it's funny because on paper there's something about his films that I would think would be the kind of movies I wouldn't like. There's something about the aesthetic or something. Like when I first saw him and heard about his films, and then I watched Little Bites, I was like, no, this is really interesting. I felt the same way here. I think this is a really solid, like, meta movie. I particularly well directed, and that's kind of fun to be able to say. It doesn't feel as it feels like maybe they have a little bit more of a budget. This is about a Hollywood screenwriter who's pretty successful, and he's had some like decent hits, but he's kind of struggling for the inspiration of his new film, played by Brandon Scott. And that's partly what elevates something like this, is like it's not just one of our friends in the lead. It's like an actor that we'd all recognize from movies and TV shows and stuff. And he's like, solid. He's struggling with this idea. His wife is played by Chrissy Fox, and I'm telling you, she's becoming one of my favorite of like, just she has a smile that's like infectious. Like she smiles on screen and you feel good, and you're like, she has a quality that I think she could be like in really big mainstream movies. I really
I
think she.
hope so.
She's that good. Like she is that talented from, this to even Terrifier 3 or whatever it was. Anyway, she's his wife and she's really good in this. So he's struggling for inspiration. One day, he has a kind of a dream that night of this big baby, big baby slasher face mask coming to his bed and like kind of talking to him, and he wakes up and he's all freaked out about it. And so I was like, oh God, I don't know if this is going to be something I'm going to like, And as it goes, he just does some really interesting things where basically he starts writing. She's like, you should write that. Make that your new killer. Like, start writing the script. So he starts, writing what he can down, but he's still hitting roadblocks. And then one of the victims, basically, he's writing this story given to him by Big Baby. Big Baby showed up and said, what happened to him, that when he was a child in a swimming pool, all these kids watched as he drowned in the pool. And so then we one of the one night a woman played by Catherine Corcoran from Terrifier, she is in her
Catherine
swimsuit.
Corcoran.
Corcoran, yeah, I don't know how to put it. She shows up and she's completely soaked, and she's like begging for him to not write about her because he's like, if you write about us, he will find us and he will kill us and we will die in real life. And she's like freaking out, and it's like a nightmare he's having. He can't be her real, but he starts seeing all these different characters before they die, and then the clown, and then he starts writing about it. So he's basically writing a meta story about this killer. And as he's doing it, the real people are being brutally murdered, and it's making him go a little crazy. It's like it's not perfect. It's like, a crazy meta movie. But like, I was kind of into it, and I thought it was interesting and kind of a and it had a lot of people we know. And that's usually actually puts me off a movie. It's the opposite for me usually. Art the Clown has like one line. The guy, Chaz Bono, Del Howison, Dark Del,
Aww.
Angel Melanson is
I love
a tickle
Angel.
ticker, Fangoria's own. Luke Barnett is got a small. So a lot of people just pop up as small cameos. But yeah, again, I think Spider-One. Same with Rob Zombie. It's like Rob Zombie, his brother, is sometimes makes really interesting movies, and sometimes they're just loud and obnoxious. But I think in some ways, Spider seems to be a bit more of a quiet director in terms of his films, and I appreciate it. So I thought that this one is still, you have to still pay for it for now, but at some point it comes to Shudder.
I am so happy to hear that because when I saw the preview for this, I thought it was just man baby slasher.
That's what I thought too.
And
It's a lot more meta than that, yeah.
that's really smart. I love
Yeah.
that. I love movies about books and books
Yeah.
about movies.
Yeah.
So if you switch the two, I'm in. I'm
Yeah.
totally in. Okay, I'm gonna take us to this week on Shudder.
This week on
Hellcat is just coming to Shudder. I think it's this week, if not last week. This brand new one coming, did a festival run, and I really enjoyed this. It's gotten some mixed reviews, but I was in the entire way through. Directed by Brock Bodell, and this was kind of one of his first films. He'd done a couple other smaller things, but this was like his first like feature. And we open in the back of an RV, which is not why I like it. That was cool, but that's not why I loved it. With a woman who is like disheveled and sweaty and can't remember anything and can barely remember who she is. But she wakes up and there is this speaker box, which she can talk to the guy who's driving the RV. And she's like, "Why am I in here? Who the fuck are you?" And he tells her that she has a bad infection that she got cut somehow. And she does. She has this horrible gash on her arm. And he says that she has got this bad infection that's like spreading through animals right now. And he is driving her to get her to this very specific doctor who is the only doctor who can treat her. And she looks down and she actually can see this like infection spreading slowly up her arm. And so she's like, "What the hell is this?" But that's kind of where the movie stays for a while, is it's her trying to figure out if she's actually been abducted by this guy, if he's like, gonna cut out her kidneys and sell them on the black market. And then part of it is like a locked room thing as she's trying to figure out how to get out of the back of a moving RV that is like barreling down the highway while also trying to figure out what happened to her and discovering things around the RV. You know how much I love a good locked room mystery. So this was great. I had a really fun time with this. Lots of twists, and I did not see where it was going one bit. Great acting from the girl who's in there. We get other characters coming in and out at various points, but pretty much it's for the most of it like a single hander in that RV. Her name's Dakota Gorman. I have not seen her in anything else, but she was awesome in this. So I had a lot of fun with it and did not anticipate where that RV was heading.
I will follow that with one that's kind of similar that I watched last night. I actually have a nurse double, but I'll do this one first. This one's called a brand new one called Bury the De Bury the Devil. pardon me, sorry.
You okay?
Yeah, just coughing.
Ernie, Ernie,
Ernie can
edit.
check that,
Ernie, don't edit, edit. Maybe we'll
or we'll hear
see.
from our friends.
Or we'll
Like
hear from our friends and they'll
friends,
tell us that
write to us
Ernie.
right now, and then we'll laugh together with Ernie. Okay, Bury the Devil, director Adam O'Brien. This is a it opens with a hospice. I didn't know anything about it, so I just pushed play. A hospice nurse, or she's kind of new to that world, is doing home care with this older woman, and she has dementia, and so there's a lot of trying to gain her trust because she doesn't remember meeting her, and did I set you up at the bed already? And a lot of that kind of talk. And it starts unfolding, and a few minutes I'm watching this long take, and then I realize, oh, the entire movie is one take. So this
Oh,
is the
wait,
gimmick
what
of the
was it called
movie.
again? Bury
Bury
the
the
Dead?
Devil. Bury the Devil. It's a new one. And you know, we'll get to the how that works. But so I start watching it, and it's going, you know, and she is talking to this older woman. She finally tucks her into bed, and then she walks down the stairs and lights all the candles, and then there's a knock at the door, and the woman's ex-husband comes, and he's kind of aggressive. And there's a lot of things happening in this self-contained world of the you never really leave the house and just outside the house. We start to learn that she collected some artifacts, and now a little later we kind of come to learn that maybe she's possessed by the deceased child that they had once, and is actually it's a possession movie and you're watching it as she kind of turns. Now, Taking of Deborah Logan's pretty hard to top, you know, with this kind of thing, and this is definitely treading that territory. The thing about the first 10 minutes, I'm like, oh wow, this is pretty impressive technically. And then what happens to me, and that almost always happens with these, even Rope, I feel this way. You just start to notice the camera, and you start stop to notice that you don't really notice the drama much as much. And like when a camera's going upstairs, and a character's in the shot, and then the character turns the corner, and now the camera's like catching up to a person versus them being in the shot, you start to, and that happens like many times in the movie, and you start to go, well, I'm very aware that there's a camera operator, and this is just like a, it could also be like, you know, filmmaking-y issues sometimes where you just get hung up on, it's a little contrived because of that. And I kept halfway through, I was like, you know what, if this movie was a traditionally shot creepy movie, I think it'd be creepier because you'd have the shot close up of the face and close up of the other person and shot reverse shot you know, all the language of movies. Instead, we're kind of just reliant on this being one take. And the only movie re in recent years that I think was able to make that kind of exciting was probably Mads. It's not perfect,
Oh, Mads, I
but Mads
loved.
is chaotic, and that means it's not boring, and I
And
think it's
it
very hard
felt,
not to.
Mads felt very well choreographed. You know, there
Yeah.
was the one Silent House that was originally,
Yeah, Silent House is
there's a
interesting.
Spanish one,
Spanish one,
and
yeah.
then they did the American remake. I felt that in the American remake,
Yeah.
and I still don't know if they shot it all in one take or if they were cheating it and
No, there's
finding
probably
like
cheats in
stitch
this too.
spots.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely, you could still feel like where they're adjusting for the camera movement or the actor took a step further and the camera's trying to adjust. And yeah, it
You just
felt
feel the
very.
time more as well, because like you're waiting for things to happen, or somebody reacts and then the camera has to turn to them versus like a quick edit there, you know. So technically, yes, well done. Like, don't get me wrong, they pull it off and it doesn't feel amateur or anything. It just the whole time I was thinking, I think this would have been creepier. It was never that creepy to me. Some interesting filmmaking for sure, and I think some of our listeners would actually really enjoy it. But I just kept I was too it's too self-aware for me ultimately. You know, and the girl's trying to defeat, you know, the possessed older woman. Whereas Mads had crazy energy and it kept jumping to different people, which is an insane thing to do for a long take movie, because if any person makes a mistake, the whole thing is, you know, totally screwed. So but you know, for people interested in that kind of gimmick, and that's some kind of part of the problem, is it does become a gimmick when you're doing. I like a long take in a movie. Like if there's a 10-minute sequence, that's cool. Like to me, that's kind of baller when you have one section of your movie do something like this. But when the whole movie's like that, it can you can feel the time. So that one's called Bury the Devil, and that one is out right now.
Okay, I'm gonna take us to. I didn't even look up where this was. I feel like I paid to rent it. I'll have to Google this while after I'm done talking. Nightborne.
Oh yeah,
This one is
I
the
heard of it.
new one by Hanna Bergholm. She is the one, the Finnish director who did Hatching last
Yeah,
year or 2 years
those
ago,
are
which I really liked. I really liked Hatching. That was a bold, like first movie. It felt big for a first movie. This is an interesting follow-up. I don't know if I liked it as much as Hatching, but it was doing some interesting stuff. A lot of similar themes, though. It is about a couple. Her female is Finnish Saga and then also British John, played by Rupert Grint. They're married and they go to visit Saga's old grandmother's house in this like ancient Finnish forest. And the house is really old. And they're there and they're talking about having kids and everything. And while they're there, they just have this epiphany of like, let's not go back to London, forget our city life in the UK, let's move here and fix up this house. So they both like quit their London jobs and decide to stay there. So couple moves to country, which is like opening of a bajillion folk horror films. We then cut to a very up close, full frontal baby head crowning vagina birth, which I had not seen in a horror movie before. So kudos there, because that I was not expecting, where like you're seeing her in labor and then all of a sudden just smash cut. It's right there.
But nothing can top First Omen. That's the best
No.
birth
That is
scene.
the best. So she gives birth. So I should mention that when they decide to consummate this, when the baby boy is made, she's like caressing this tree in the forest, and they do it in the forest. And she's like groping a tree while he's doing his thing. And so, anyway, you get that it's kind of like a weird kind of romantic, but weird, like folk horror sex scene. Well, now he's born. It was a difficult birth. He's born super hairy to the point that she's concerned, like covered head to toe in black hair. He hates sunlight. He bites everybody. He really snotty. Like if you read most of, he's constantly growling, and the rest of the time he's doing this like really snotty nasal breathing snort. So much so that if you look on Letterboxd, a lot of the reviews are like, "I loved this, but I wish the kid would stop breathing like a bulldog." And that's a lot of it, is like he is snorting constantly, just really animalistic. And Saga is all like, "Hey, there's something totally wrong with my baby." Whereas everybody else, including Rupert Grint dad, her mom, all of her friends, her doctor, are like, "Oh no, the baby's totally fine. You're having postpartum depression." And it continues from there. And the simultaneous to the weird baby that nobody thinks is weird but her, this tree is like growing through the floorboards of the house. And every single time they try to stop it and they fix the floorboards, it regrows. So it's definitely a movie with a lot to say about postpartum depression and birth. But ultimately, I really liked where this went. I loved the ending. Like, I thought the ending made the whole thing worthwhile. It was a lot slower than Hatching for me. It felt like a Rosemary's Baby without neighbors or anybody. It was just her and Rupert Grint in a house the whole time, with her saying something's wrong and him going, "No, the baby's just got a lot of hair." And so it did feel a lot slower than I was expecting it to, but I really liked where it went. So it was kind of mixed for me, but not bad. Not as good as Hatching, but I still enjoyed it. And that was Nightborn.
So folk horror.
Very folk
Very
horror.
folky.
Very
Okay.
folk horror all the way through.
The next one of my Night Nurse double feature is called Night Nurse. This is one of my favorite movies so far this year. It's a indie
Night
film,
Nurse?
Night Nurse, but it's not, it's only, it, I'm putting it on our show, but it's like, it's not horror. It's like, it's basically a throwback to erotic thriller, but it's so weird tonally that the two comps, that the only comp I can really come, you know, is Robert Altman's Three Woman meets Pasolini's Teroma, because it's like basically this awkward night nurse is about to start in this retirement facility that's kind of self-contained, and she's going to look after this old guy. They keep saying how old he is, but he really only looks like he's like 60-ish. But you know, anyway, you go with it. He's old. He's got some. They think he's got some sort of dementia, and yet his day nurse looks like she's kind of maybe even a little hot for him, and they're doing the swimming thing where you walk around the pool with the old person to give them exercise. And everyone lives in their own apartment in the street area, so it's like, you know, all the nurses, you know, look after them, but it doesn't feel like you're in a big retirement village or something like that. And so this young girl who seems a little socially awkward gets the new job. She's going to be trained to take over the night spot, and the first thing he kind of does that night is he, you know, kind of looks at her kind of seductively, and then he calls a number, some old, he just calls an old person, probably in the community, and says, looks at her and goes, "Take the phone, tell them that you're in jail, and you tell them that it's your grandpa, that you need money, you're in jail, and need a lawyer." And she's like, "What do you mean?" And he kind of forces the lines to her as she pretends with a little girly voice, like, "Grandpa, I'm in trouble." And basically, this money-making scheme works, and they keep doing it. And it's like erotically charged, but there's no sex in the movie. It's all done through like this, these dialogue scenes where they're shaking down people, and she wants more, but he doesn't, you know, obviously sex isn't the thing because he's getting this, he's meant to be this old guy. And the opening scene is just like the shots of the telephone cord as people are talking, but like the most sexualized thing you've ever seen. It's so interesting. It's the first film by Georgia Bernstein, And I found myself like, it's not, maybe not quite a home run, but it's like I was on the edge of my seat, like about the style. It kind of feels a little Adam McGuinness-ish too in the early days. And so basically it becomes, and then all these nurses are like hanging out at his place because, you know, he gets all the good drugs, and so everyone's just hanging out as this kind of scheme keeps unfolding. But it also is realism, as in like all the acting and stuff feels real, but it also feels like there's something like off about the entire world of the film. Like it doesn't feel like it's set in our complete reality. It's that's what probably makes it more into the genre. You know, it's a little hard to put your finger on, but it was one of those films where afterwards I was like, I don't know exactly what I was watching the whole time, but I was really into it. I found it really interesting. It felt like a 90s movie in that way. And when it ended, I was like, oh, I'd really like to see if this person makes like a horror film. Like, I'm like, I'm in, you know? And they tend to be the, as you know, like my taste, like including my own movie, right? It's like, that's my sweet spot is that thing where it's like,
That
is it a horror
erotic
film?
thriller, yeah.
Erotic thriller. And it's kind of a horror film, kind of a not. So this was just took me by surprise, to be honest. I had heard it's an IFC release. I'd heard it mentioned, but, and a friend of mine really loved it, Travis Woods, and that made me watch it. But I just think it's really interesting. So the caveat, like, as again, with reviews, you'll see, these are 2 stars or 4 stars, like, and that's usually a sign that something's going to be interesting, but not tick everyone's. So if you're ice cream man at the start of the show, if you love ice cream man, you might not like this one. Vice versa, you know. There's a movie for everyone on this episode.
Yes, there is, because I'm now about to take us to Demon Wind.
Oh yeah.
Demon
Okay. So how
Wind.
does this fit into your life? Tell me.
So I am currently doing a project which I hope I can talk about soon, but I'm having to watch rural horror films, we'll
Okay.
say. And Demon Wind, did we show this during the pandemic? We were doing that online screening series to through
Yes.
USC, and I feel like we showed Demon Wind.
Yeah, but I've already forgotten because we also did that one with,
Night Beast.
yeah, that one that's set in the winter, Winter Beast.
Yeah, Winter Beast. Oh,
And
thank
so
you.
I don't think we did do Demon Wind. I think me and you just talked about it back on a deep cut back in the
That's
day
probably it.
or on a draft, but it's definitely come up
Yeah.
in our life.
So I have not watched it in a
Yeah.
really long time. I've just kind of talked about it, like just broadly. But because I'm doing this project, I couldn't remember why they were there. I just remember that they had gone to a house that some guy had inherited and that they stayed there. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna have to rewatch this. 1989, I think I forgot to write that down. And I sat my 13-year-old next to me, and I was like, I don't know what this is. I just remember it's like stupid gory. So we're gonna watch this because it's stupid gory. And I remembered it being fun. Oh, I think it's 1990. I think this was like the tail end of the
Yes, I think
rural
it is the very
camping
start of the
trend.
90s. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's about a group of friends who travel to this old farm because one of the guys discovers that his family is from there and he didn't know them. And so, or more of like they had died really early and he'd been adopted out. And so he goes back there, but then he's like recruited all of his friends to come with him because he's like, I really need you right now. And he's got like 8 friends with him, not like the best bud who's like going to travel with him because this is going to be a sensitive, hard weekend to go back to where he's from. He recruits like 8 friends, and some of them are real assholes. Like there's definitely like every 80s cliche of like, this is the rich douche, this is his really smart, nerdy friend, this is the frumpy girl who's actually really hot. And yeah, so we got all of the 80s cliches that he has brought out because I really need you right now, man. And they're all going with him to this farm that he was born on. And we have multiple, what I'll like, foretellers on the way that, yeah, you don't go around that old farm for a reason. There's bad stuff out there. Like we have like 3 of those on the route to the farm. But finally, we get to the farm. And once they get there, they discover that they can't leave. Like their cars won't start. This weird fog rolls in and they can't get past it. They're just like stuck there. And then they start getting attacked by demons. So they run inside to the farmhouse to keep them. But then they all start getting possessed and slowly turning into demons themselves. And midway through the movie, and it's hyper gory, it's like super, super gory, like teeth falling out, weird foamy stuff. Like it's just heads expanding and swelling on screen. It's such like 90s gore. Midway through, Marnie looks over at me and she goes, Mom, I don't really understand the story to this. And I was like, yeah, don't, no, we don't need to try, honey. Just, it's just fun. So I just wanted to include this because if you are just looking for something kind of just mindless, good throwback that you have not watched before, 1990s Demon Wind, just to watch some people's face melt. It's just fun. It's stupid fun. So Demon Wind.
And it's a good chance to plug our Patreon, Deep Cut, where
Yes.
we talk about 100 other movies that aren't
Just like
quite
this.
great, but they are have good melty stuff and crazy stuff happening in them. That's where we talk about lots of weird stuff. So
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I had one
You have
more
another movie?
one more new one that isn't a it's a documentary, but it's a high recommend for everyone. I don't know if it inspired me or made me feel a little sad, and that
Is
can
this
be a
the
good thing.
video store one?
And no, it's like that. This one's called
Okay.
Mockbuster. Yeah, so this is
Oh.
about, and our friend Dick told me about this, and I was like, okay, I'm kind of curious. This is this is made by this person who is in the film. So the documentarian is also the star of it. He calls himself Once Promising, but he's just an Australian filmmaker, no different than any of us. He's an Australian filmmaker who kind of went to film school and then started doing corporate videos, and then he had a baby, and now all he does is corporate videos. He's like, fuck. I thought I was going to be like a real filmmaker and I have good taste and all this stuff, but why hasn't it happened? And he lives in the middle of nowhere, in a part of Australia. And, so he's trying to reckon with this idea of like, uh-oh, what do I do? How can I turn my life around? And then he's like watching all these, like just for fun, he's just watching these B movies from the asylum. And he's like, huh, like these aren't very good. Like, I should just make one of these to like start making. And he's just in his brain. He lives in Australia. So this is obviously a small studio that does ripoffs and Mockbusters that right in Burbank or whatever, Glendale. And he writes an email to them and says, hey, I live in Australia and would really like to make an asylum movie. And they literally write back again, okay. And that's how it starts.
I
And
just looked, one
it's
of the
pretty
very
funny.
first people being interviewed, producer at Asylum, Brendan Patrizio. And I love he comes to trivia. He's
Oh yeah.
awesome.
Well,
Yeah.
all the main people there. Oh, okay, yes, that he actually becomes kind of one of the stars of the film. Yes, he kind of saves the guy's movie at a certain point because so they say yes, and he's like, oh shit, what does this mean? Because he wanted to make serious movies, he didn't want to make asylum. So they fly him. He flies on his own dime. He has to fly to the asylum from Australia. He has a meeting. They're very candid. I gotta say, my respect for the asylum, which didn't exist really. I must say, I've not no, mostly because I don't really watch them. It's not anything personal. I just don't really watch these. But it went up a lot because of the way they talk about their own product. It's pretty funny. Like one of them's just like, this is utter crap. But so is Hollywood. Who cares? He goes there, has some meetings. They don't have a script yet for him, but the reason they said yes to him is because they wanted to do this like a submarine movie in Australia. So he kind of ticks the box, and then they're like, "But you're gonna have to figure all this out, and here's your budget. I can't remember what it is, but it is not high for all the stuff that's needed, and you're gonna shoot in 6 days." And he's like, "Oh," and so he gets kind of a tour of all the asylum studio, meets all the people, and then he goes back to Australia. And then a few weeks go by, and he's in Australia, like. What happens now? Like, I'm still waiting for a script and they want me to make this. And how do I cast this? And you need a celebrity in it because that's part of their model. And then he has an interview with Eric Roberts. It's just him and Eric Roberts's house when he was in LA and Eric Roberts's wife. And they're like so nice to him. They're just giving him tips about making these kinds of movies and stuff. And then eventually a script comes and he's like, oh, this is, he's like a little worried about it. And then the guy you just mentioned, when he's about to start having to make his film, is flown out to Australia to help him because he's kind of struggling with how do you do this in 6 days? And this guy goes, look, just chill. I'll walk you through it. And that guy becomes kind of a main feature of it. And it's just about watching the chaos of this film. And it's pretty tense. And it's not love. He's a nice guy, totally nice guy. It's not like American movie where I find it always inspiring and funny, but I'm always inspired by American movie. This also, the fact that he makes this movie, that like, who cares kind of movie and is going through the process. There's a little part of me that was also a little sad about the what it meant, and as well as being glad that hey, it's making a movie is better than not making a movie, and I do agree with that. Like I think that's something you don't always feel at 20, but maybe as you get older. Really interesting film. I highly recommend it for anyone curious about how those movies get made or the sci-fi originals back in the day, and just the pace and speed and what it's like to have a dream that's starting to pass you by, and you're like, shit, maybe I should try this. It was fun, and definitely recommend. It's streaming all over the place. I think it's probably still under pay, but worth your time. I thought it was very interesting, and we know a lot of
Wow.
people who work in those movies. So,
We do.
and that's.
Actually, one of my really good friends is shooting one right now, because he keeps texting me from set and it's his first directing experience and I can't wait to talk about it and have him on the show and everything. But he's making one of those. It's a good training ground too.
Yeah, I can see that too, but you can also see how it's like it's sometimes the wrong
You have
training.
5 days.
Yeah. I mean, I've been around my friend who obviously was doing all the Wachowski stuff. And I was in Lizard Man and all that. And that's the same model. It's just these ones are ripping off something specific usually to make them,
But
profitable.
I went to set to visit Brendan one day. He had invited me to come over to the asylum where they're shooting them here in Burbank. And they have some beautiful sets there. Like the day that I was there, they have a full plane. And so they were working on this like cargo plane. They have like full like scaffolding. They had a spaceship. Like they had impressive sets pre-built, like ready to go. So yeah,
Well,
they're
here's the
doing
thing.
something.
So if anyone's listening, here's the thing. If you or I were to make one of these, it would hurt the kind of process we're trying to make other movies, right? It would hurt. But if we made one together, maybe no one would care, and it's only 6 days. So I'm going to throw out to the world if somebody wanted us to co-direct an asylum movie in 6 days just to do it,
I
maybe
think we could
and then
do
we
it.
document it and it becomes a
I think we could
podcast.
do it.
I would actually say yes for that
We
process
should
if we're both doing it.
text
Okay.
Brendan this.
Well, we'll just see if anyone listens. But I'm not kidding. I would do it, but I wouldn't do it alone.
I think it would be a blast with you because we've always talked about co-directing together. Because I feel like we have different styles, but we tend to agree with each other.
Well,
Like
with
Elric,
bonkers stuff, we would agree. Like
yeah,
if it
with
was something
bonkers
crazy,
shit,
we would be able to go, yeah, let's go.
we would totally
I think it
agree.
would also be interesting journalistically. Like it'd be like, well, we're going to do this from the inside and then also report back that we are doing this in a week. And shit, we only need a few weeks to knock it out. It's not like a normal movie. So anyway. Anyway, so if we
Okay. Universe, we have put this out into the
Mockbus
universe.
2027
Hell
or
yeah. Can it be a
let's
shark film? You know, I've always wanted to do
Yeah,
one.
well, what's so funny about these movies, because I've never made something where the thing you're filming is just never there, right? So I'm watching these guys on a beach in Australia going, oh, and there's just nothing there. There's not even a tennis ball. And then it comes back to the effects, and then somebody is just putting in dinosaurs or putting in sharks. So I think if it was water, it would be pretty, it'd be funny and hard. I don't know what it would be. I don't know if we'd have much say. It might be the kind of thing where they go, here's your one
No,
pager.
I think they
And
tend to hand it to you.
yeah. Anyway, let's see what happens.
Okay,
We're
we
on the
have put that
record.
out into the universe.
And not for the first time, we will regret it.
Oh, no. We will not. This will make us. Okay, so I'm going to take us to some books here. So, by the way, Elric is now over teaching with me at USC, and I'm giving him a tour of the camp. Welcome, fight on.
I
So.
finally understand Star Wars from the inside. I used to like be part of the rebels and we're just hanging out being cool. Like we're little rebels. And then suddenly I'm like, oh, the dark side is a lot more fun.
Yeah, the
And like
dark
you have
side's
better
there.
toys and like this is way better.
We got cooler cameras, the nicer buildings. It's pretty
No.
nice. So,
Everyone
welcome.
been nice so far, so it's been good.
Yeah, I'm giving him a tour of campus and I unlock my office for the first time in like 4 months because I'd left like April and hadn't been back. And I have like a stack of mail on my desk, including stuff that I didn't even know about. But one of them I cracked open was a graphic novel called Lake Yellowwood Slaughter by Alejandro Arbona. And I brought it home that night and read the whole thing in one sitting. I really enjoyed this. This is from Flying Goats Press. And it was great art with really good giallo vibes, but it definitely went for a different approach, which I saw some reviews online that people were put off by, but I thought it was quite intelligent in that capacity, where it is about a group of friends who met at summer camp when they were little, like think back in the 80s. Group of friends meet at summer camp, but the summer camp has this awful tragedy where there's a killer and a bunch of people die and they shut the camp down. Now, like 30 years later, this group of friends has gotten back together and they have decided to fund reopening the camp. So they have all put in money. They've hired a counselor that they know who was part of the camp long ago, and they have decided to reopen the camp and fund it. And so they are super excited. They're sending their own kids there. And as soon as they drop off their kids, they're like, okay, you know what? We're going to go to the other side of the lake. We got an Airbnb and we're all going to have a reunion. We're all going to go have our adult reunion and relive our camp days and talk about old times. And so they drop off their kids at their freshly opened camp and head across the lake to their like rental place, their rental cabin, and start their own party. But the killer returns and comes after them. And so it's very much what starts as a camp, but then he follows them across the lake and it becomes kind of killing the adults. And it was definitely interesting because everybody was anticipating it to be like a straight camp horror, but it becomes very much like past sins coming back to haunt you. It's a raincoat killer in gloves with a knife, so it does have this really strong giallo feel, but really good art. And I just kind of loved that it didn't stay with the kids, that it went with the parents. I thought was just really clever. It was adult horror. So, Lake Yellowwood Slaughter. I enjoyed this.
The last things I'll mention here is a reminder, outside of Widow's Bay, which is untouchable this year. Like, it's my favorite thing. It'll be above even any movies this year for me. Furious is so good. It is exciting. It is like dark
This is that
storytelling.
new TV show?
Yeah, this is the Hulu. It's fantastic. It's like so angry as a show, and the female character played by the main character, Emmy Rossum, is so good because she's like, each episode you feel like you're revealing a little bit more about her and why she's so angry as this cop character, kind of investigating Epstein-like cover up of rich guys who have slept with this girl, and the girl, one of the girls who is become a serial killer. She's killing all the rich guys because of what they did to her friend, who was also a prostitute at the time, and when they were underage. And it just has energy. Like, it's on Hulu. Yeah, Hulu FX. Yeah, no, Hulu. Sorry, it's on Hulu. And
They're
it's
owned by the same
yeah,
mouse.
and Disney. Yeah, exactly. So if you have Disney, you can watch it. But it's very non-Disney. I mean, it's very dark. In terms of the characters, like, it's not so much the graphic in terms of the kills and stuff, but like why things are happening when you think about it. It's like one of the darker things of the year. It is fantastic, and she has never been better. I've always liked her, and Shameless, she was really great. But this is, there's no way you will be able to turn it off if you watch a couple episodes. You will love it. It's really good. And then I also watched the first two episodes of Lanterns, which I'm not like a big comic book person anymore so much, but this is more like True Detective. So they've done a gritty, stripped down to sky. It's that actor, I forgot the name, from Friday Night Lights and everything, and he's teaching the younger person who would replace him as the Green Lantern, but they're not wearing costumes and stuff. And there's a murder in a town, and they're like, what, it could be alien, but it's all shot like True Detective, and it's real downbeat, and it's funny and real. And I've never really, especially DC characters like Green Lantern, that's never really. And I read
He was
X-Men and stuff,
never.
but no, never
Yeah,
really.
he was never one of the characters that I really gravitated
No,
towards. So I had kind of passed on this.
it's really good, and I can tell, like, this is how they should always do the DC characters, because it works for Batman so well, and it's that kind of style. But anyway, it was good. Not hard, but fringe, so.
I'll quickly thank the WG or the HWA, the Horror Writers Association, gave us a bunch of books while we were
Great.
at Midsummer Scream. I worked my way through the little coffee shop of horrors anthology, which was really fun. It's written by a father-son team, which I found very inspiring because, again, the idea of organizing my family to do any type of creative activity sounds painful. So a fact of a father-son writing team. And it is different horror stories that take place in coffee shops. So think like, what was the one, Coffee and Cigarettes or 100? I can't even remember. There
Yeah,
was a
the Jim
movie,
Jarmusch one,
the
Coffee and
Jim
Cigarettes.
Jarmusch one.
You shot
It
one,
was,
Barista, at my
oh, yeah,
coffee
I
shop. That would have
did.
fit perfectly into that.
Perfectly. So yeah, and it's all different coffee shops, and it opens by telling you the coffee shop, where it is, kind of the vibes of it, and then it moves into the stories. There was a really good aquatic horror one that I loved dearly,
Wait,
and
how does
so
aquatic horror get into a coffee shop?
oh, it does. I mean,
Oh,
they leave
okay.
the coffee shop at one
Oh, okay.
point, but it starts at a coffee shop. That's the
Okay, all
important
right.
thing. And then I've also been reading Edenville, which I finished this morning because I was like listening to the audiobook because I didn't want to put it down. Like when I get to like two chapters from the end, I have to listen to the audiobook while I'm getting ready in the morning because otherwise I'll have like an aneurysm throughout the day if I can't figure out where it goes. This is Sam Rebelstein. I had talked about one of his newer books, Galloway's Gospel, last year, which I really enjoyed. This I like even better because this is, it's a book about a book, and you know how I love those. This is about a writer who's really struggling, and somehow he gets inspired to write this story about this kind of cosmic character named the Shattered Man, who comes out of walls and haunts people, and he writes it as a novel, and he's never able to really write a follow-up. And years later, this college, Edenville College, invites him to join as the writer in residence. And he's kind of like, I don't know why I wrote one novel and it only did so okay. Like, why am I here? But he gets treated like a celebrity and they're just freaking out over him being there and encouraging him to get back to writing. And for some reason, now that he's in this setting, it just seems to be flowing more and he's writing more stories about the Shattered Man. And I'll take you up to kind of, you realize that they have brought him there for a reason. And that he isn't so much writing as much as channeling from something bigger that they know about. And so it gets really super cosmic and really heady and really gory. So this mixed a lot of kind of my cosmic horror vibes with that book vibe. So Edenville, I love this. And then as we are departing this first section, I have to plug September 15th. Pretty Evil, my first graphic novel, YA horror graphic novel, is releasing from Simon Teen. I am so proud of this. I am just, we've had great reviews so
Been many
far.
years in the making from I remember when you already sent it off to be published. I was like, wait, years later it takes to illustrate and
2 years. So we sent this off to be published the tail end of 2023. And so now, almost 2.5 years later, it's finally coming out. It was 2 full years for the artwork. Graphic novels take a long time. Like, I have more coming that I feel like I wrote eons ago. So I wrote this in 2023. And so it's just been such a great process seeing it come to life. My art is done by legendary Tim Seeley, and it is just it's been my baby. So I'm so excited to see this. It is the story of a pop idol, Mallory, whose mom goes missing. And when the cops come over to their Hollywood home to try to figure out where her mom went to, they find all these bodies buried in their basement. And Mallory has no idea what's going on. She's canceled because everybody thinks that her mom is a serial killer. They start calling her Mallory Murder. She soon discovers that her mom had actually been hunting demons, and now Mallory has to pick up where her mom left off to figure out what happened to her mom. And so this is just wild, gory demon action. People keep saying that it's a combination of, but it's a gorier Buffy the Vampire Slayer with K-pop demon hunter notes. I'll take that.
I was going to say
So
Buffy Dexter, but
it's got Buffy Dexter vibes too. Yeah, it definitely has Dextery vibes too. Available at Amazon, Borders, Barnes and Noble, and all of your local bookstores. Like, I highly recommend you go through one of your local bookstores before you head to like Amazon and Barnes and Noble, but you can get it there. So anyways, this comes out September 15th, and hardback, paperback, ebook. I'm so proud of this.
I've got the hardback because you gave it to me at trivia, and I'm going to read it before our next show so I
You
can win.
better, you better.
But thank you for that, and congratulations. That is a big deal.
Yeah.
So yes, congrats. And speaking of children and teens and Carol, that could segue pretty well,
Well,
right?
giant unicorn. I do have unicorns in it at
Oh,
points.
okay.
So
Okay,
we'll
so
say
take it away.
giant unicorn,
Yes.
fluffy giant unicorn. You guys know how much I have loved The Too Many Cooks and little short film, and then moving into Yule Log and the second one. We are so excited to finally get him on the show. Let's talk to director Casper Kelly.
Okay, we are back and we are thrilled to bring on a director who we've talked about stuff
We've
for
talked about
many,
this
many
many
moons.
times.
We're big fans of the VHS segment, Fun Size, last year. But most importantly, the man who brought us my favorite credit in cinema history, Lars von Trier as Pi, which is seriously one of my favorite moments in anything that really took me off guard for Too Many Cooks. Welcome, Casper Kelly.
It's so great to be here. Longtime fan. And I'm missing a screening of Network for this, and happy to do it
Would
because
you say fuck
I'm going to
Sidney
be.
Lumet right now? Just say it. Fuck Sidney Lumet.
Fuck Liz Sidley New. Yeah.
Well, not Jenny. I'll be like Jenny. Jenny's
Okay.
still
Yeah,
good.
Jenny's great. No, I love Sidney Lumet. Welcome.
Well, I'm glad that you could join us, even if it meant missing network. So yeah, we've been talking about having you on for so long, because even like going back to Too Many Cooks, we did an episode, oh God, it was probably 10 years ago, on absurdist horror. And that is the one that kept coming up over and over of like, that's how you do it. That's how it's done right. And so seeing it go to this is just fantastic. So
Thank you.
that's why it's so surprising you've gone so mainstream with this one.
I
No
know.
absurdity whatsoever. Come on.
I mean, it's just a run-of-the-mill formulaic slasher. I mean,
Yeah.
yeah. No, tell us a little bit about how Buddy came to fruition, because this is not the type of thing that I could see you just taking to, Universal and then being like, yes, we can see this on every billboard across America. So how did this one happen?
Well, I actually can tie in the talk of mainstream here because there was a moment before I took on this project, where I said to my manager, "Is this too mainstream?" And he was like, "No, not at all. But it might be just mainstream enough that people might give you money to do it."
Yeah.
So, Too Many Cooks. After that, I kept busy. I did this show for Adult Swim called Your Pretty Face Is Going to Hell for 4 seasons. And then I did two movies for Adult Swim, Adult Swim Mule Log.
Which is amazing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And I love the second one even more because that one's a Hallmark movie, which I've written a couple of. But yeah, so that one's even more amazing.
Thank you. I realized that because I had a movie club and where we would watch just what we considered bad movies, and we watched Holiday. This is off topic. I'm so sorry, but I'll get
No,
back
this
on
is what we're
topic.
here
All
for.
right, we watched Holiday in Handcuffs, which is a wild Hallmark movie. I recommend it. But then I watched more and real. This is a very. Tell me if you guys have this emotion. I both sort of scoffed at it, but then I also enjoyed it unironically. Like it made
That's
me feel good.
how it was when I started getting into Lifetime, because as soon as I started directing, like Lifetime is just a fantastic training ground for directors and screenwriters because they're constantly buying and the movies are formulaic, so you can jump in pretty quickly. And as I was really starting to explore them, it was the same where I was kind of like finding myself unironically really enjoying them, even knowing kind of what they are and where the hiccups are. I was still, and I always look at my mom with the Hallmark. She will watch every Hallmark movie and she understands what they are and she understands that they're repetitive and that the characters are kind of stock, but she loves every, there's something wholesome and warming about watching that formula over and over. And I can see it because like it's the same formula for like a slasher or family moves into a haunted house. Like there's something comforting about that entrance formula.
Well, I mean, Jane Schoenbrunn just made a whole movie about this feeling, right? The feeling of seeing something at a certain point that is giving you certain feelings, but also might be considered by some people as trash. To
That's
us,
true.
the slasher film solidifies something, yeah.
And they are one of my heroes. I tell everybody that TV Glow is one of my favorite movies of the century, by far. And I loved Camp Miasma too. They just don't miss.
So with because I have to
I
ask
don't
because
think I
I'm
answered your question at all. I think
that's
that's
okay.
a new personal best.
I don't even remember
Oh,
it, so
I think
you're
you're asking
doing
about
just
buddy
fine.
inspiration, but
Oh yeah.
Oh
Well,
yeah, you want me to talk about that?
I'm gonna get there because I'm gonna start off
Welcome to the
with
show,
like
Casper Kelly. Now we're gonna I'm gonna do what your movies do. I'm gonna keep looping back. Now we're back from
I want to know, like, as you're looking at like Adult Swim, U Log and branching out, like how do you decide where to weave the horror in? Because especially with branching out, like you are beat for beat hitting a Hallmark film. How did you decide where to put the horror notes into it?
Thank you for that question. I guess it was this is an unsatisfactory answer, but it's just a feeling. In fact, there's a I just read that new David Mamet book, which I enjoyed, although he's got some wild views, but he has some very funny stories in there. And he had some phrase about like there's some like he was talking about Paul Thomas Anderson. He was like, there's some things you can learn, but there's some things you just need to have in the fingertips, I don't know. So maybe,
I
yeah,
like
but there's,
that.
I guess there's a feeling, but I do love the collision of flavors that probably maybe shouldn't go together. Although I think there's other Hallmark horror happening. Like it might be in the zeitgeist now, but But yeah, I love that. And the whole idea of she's in a horror movie and he's not, and they're on a date, you know.
It's
And then the
hilarious.
tone changes when you cut to them, and you know, yeah, that feels really satisfying to me. I think, I guess I'm just thinking of the audience. The part of the director's job is like being a surrogate for the audience of like, okay, when are they going to be bored? When am I bored? When am I wanting something new to happen? Am I buying this? Is this earned? You know, et cetera. All those questions that come up.
Now we can circle back to kind
Okay.
of like going off those two films for Adult Swim. How did Buddy come to fruition?
Well, and like those two movies were my idea, and it was sort of Adult Swim doesn't really make movies, but I felt like that hook of it being a Yule log, they would like, and they did, like as just a fun way to mess with the audience. So anyway, with Buddy, it was a little different. It was the producers of Barbarian, J.D. Lifshitz, came to me and said, "Hey, I think you should do a horror movie loosely based around Barney." And I wasn't, at first I was not sure because I've had not seen a lot of mascot horror, but I felt like, and I'm sure a lot of them are good, but I felt like, okay, it's cute, but it's got an axe. What a contrast. I felt like that had been trod a lot. But I started talking, and we started talking, and I found new ways to enter it, hopefully, and new things to express in that form, and really more about of being trapped in a TV show, which is sort of like Too Many Cooks, of course. So that kind of became my entry. And what would it be like to live in a TV show and you don't really have any tools about the outside world, you know? And then that's when I talked to my manager of like, is this too mainstream? And he's like, no, not at all.
I know when you kill kids, you're on the right track, so you're okay. But I love that you find the menacing stuff and all the innocence and TV, the history of TV, obviously, and the amount of children that have come out years after being on TV shows, having, real emotional issues or sexual assaults. And just so I think it's taking something in a light way, but it is weaving it through that, this
Yes.
idea, which is fascinating.
No, that was a consideration, that horrible documentary about the Nickelodeon shows, and
Oh
just
my God, I
yeah.
had to turn that off. Like, that got dark. Like,
Well,
by
and the
the.
BBC as well. The BBC had a horrible thing
Oh,
with
yeah.
that.
The. What was that
Yeah.
guy's name?
I can't remember, but he was their main kind of showrunner guy for years.
Talk a little bit about the production, because what struck me the most about Buddy was like the in-depth like set builds that you guys, like how it looked like a Barney show. Like there must have been so much production design consideration and really kind of designing those sets out.
Yes, that was the art director, production designer was Anna Kathleen, and there was a lot of thought taken to who we hired, and she just really was saying the right things, and she was like, I think parts of it should look like Wizard of Oz, and I'm like, absolutely, yes. Yeah, she was just great, and was just great at utilizing the budget smartly. And going for it. And I remember we shot in Cleveland, and
Wait,
where
why
none of us
Cleveland?
lived.
No one has ever told us Cleveland.
Yeah,
Everybody's
pretty
like,
much,
you're
yes.
in Georgia. Like, why Cleveland?
I know. Well, it was a Cleveland company,
Oh, okay.
Glowspark, who their bona fides are pretty awesome. I think their first movie was Take Shelter. Then they did Compliance, and they
I love
recently did
Compliance.
Emily the Criminal.
Oh, cool.
So they got good taste. So
Yeah.
so they have a lot of Cleveland financiers, but then they also have a good in with the tax credit there. But there was a this is more information than you ever wanted, but there was another company there, TRG, that does photographs for catalogs, like for mattresses and stuff. And they had a whole prop building department and stages. They had a volume stage and green
Oh,
screen and
for a
blue.
mattress catalog?
Yeah,
That's wild.
it's a wild, it's in the old, it's kind of really fascinating to me. It's in the old American Greetings campus, which is huge. It's the size of a college campus, it feels like. And it was like, it's hard to imagine a day where greeting cards were so huge that they had just giant writers' rooms of like, here's an idea for this card, you know? So, but
Where's
anyway.
that Mad Men series? I'd watch that show. All about
Oh,
the greeting
yeah.
card guys. Come on.
You know, there was, and this is,
Starring Tim Robinson, right?
at some point, I had looked up on WGA, like some of the other writers that classified. And I remember that there was one for writing game show questions. I swear there was a WGA classification for writing greeting cards. It was like single line things. And I know that that was like mentioned. But yes, so apparently it was a hot thing for a long time.
Yes, and then this company there wanted to get into making movies, so they cooperated with Low Spark, and you know how it is with these days with the movies. There's like five logos up front. You know,
Always.
it takes a village to get a thing financed. So yeah, that's why we shot it in Cleveland, and I have nothing bad to say about Cleveland. It was great. We had a great time, very affordable, a lot of fun. It's where artists used to move. Like they moved to a livable city. You know what I mean? And get you're not going to believe me. There's no traffic. We were driving somewhere at like 6, and I'm like, "There's no traffic. What's going on?" And like, well, when the population drops by 70%, that's what you get. No traffic. And I'm like, "This is like
Wow.
heaven." But you still have a sports team, so this is the perfect.
Yeah.
Not that I'm a huge sports fan, but I like to go to the games. Yeah.
Well, you're in LA right now, right? You're visiting
Yes,
LA.
yes.
Welcome. Okay, here's your
Where
traffic.
actually, where
You'll
are you
get
from?
plenty. No, Atlanta's got to be worse than LA, I think.
Oh, okay.
Atlanta's traffic all the time. At least you guys have a semblance of a grid system here and there, and
Yeah.
you have nice sidewalks and what. We're a mess down there, but I love
I
it.
Are you
wanted.
from Atlanta originally?
I'm from North Carolina originally,
Oh,
but
nice.
I've lived in Atlanta a long time. And my dad's a Georgian. He grew up where they shot Deliverance, as a matter of fact.
That was shot near, I thought that was shot near Southwest Virginia, where I'm from. So we'd always thought that that was kind of, now I have to Google this.
No, Google it. I
Oh.
think it was shot in
The
Rabun Gap, Georgia.
Calawessi, going down the
And
Calawessi.
hold on.
While you're
Oh.
Googling it, I'll tell you a story is that, of course, all my relatives were not very fond of that movie, but
Mine too. I
they
was
did
a
not know
big.
about directors, so they just all hated Burt Reynolds. They blamed Burt.
So yeah, it is Northwest, Northeast Georgia. Yeah,
So were
okay.
you were, are you related to the Driver Brothers?
To the who?
It's just my favorite line in that movie where he's like, "You're gonna have to ask the Driver Brothers."
Oh,
He's like, "How
the.
do I get the car up there?" Ask the
But
Driver Brothers.
I do know one of the guys at the end is one of the Dillard boys, because there's a great it used to be there called the Dillard House. I mean, it's still there, but it got bought out. It's not the same.
I went to
Anyway.
SCAD, so I was lived in Savannah for a couple of years and loved it down there.
Yeah.
So much fun. I wanted to ask because the thing about everything you've done, and it's definitely in this too, you often will push how long we can stay in a certain tone or vibe, and that's like when you're talking about the in your fingers and knowing when to go hard, knowing that's the thing that's so exciting. It's like a momentary. It feels chaotic for a moment, but I love the way you lead us to it. And in this film, you get to push it for even longer in a way. And I don't want to give spoilers, but there's a moment where you go, "Oh, this is what the movie is." Like in my brain, at a certain moment, I'm like, "Oh, I have to brace myself because this is what I'm going to be watching." And that's when things change again. So I'm interested because it's in all your work, how you pitch your stuff. So because in watching your stuff, I'll hand you money to make a movie, right? When I watch it. But if you're pitching to me, I don't know if I'd be as brave because I wouldn't know where you're taking it. So I was just curious how much of when you're pitching your all through, whether it's shorts or adults, just kind of how you structure it, whether you're somebody who like uses a lot of visual work and then builds in the twist, or whether you are holding things back. And I'm just genuinely curious.
With this one, I wrote because he was already into a Barney horror movie, and I wrote a like a 5-page, more of a brain dump than an outline, but kind of it had a beginning, middle, and end. I don't think it came off, and I'm not sure I realized it how long it would be in a certain world before we went to script, because you're just thinking of story. You're not necessarily, I mean, I'm imagining some visuals, but I imagine they were just thinking of story. So it wasn't until the script phase and we started thinking about that. And for a while we were going to intercut it with the following sequence. We tried that in script phase, but it didn't work. And then we kind of said, this is actually a fault, not a feature. It's claustrophobic. And then when you get to go out of that, it's very relieving and then frustrating again. But we did do, this is getting slightly spoilery, but not really. We did include some shot, like for the audience, it starts in a show of Buddy and it's 3-4 ratio, like an old CRT 90s TV show. We did have some sort of flash frames that were bigger, hinting at stuff to come. So for the, so there's a little glimpse, there's a little thread of like, okay, there's other stuff coming. And then we did end up tightening it like another 2 minutes, which I think helped a lot. So it felt about right. Like it was a little long for a while, and but then we tightened it, and then it cooked, you know.
But I guess I'm not meaning it as a criticism, because to me it's actually the thing that makes these things so interesting. It's like if you just did one quick shot of Buddy's show and then went to a regular movie, I don't think you'd feel the tension of this being a unique piece. Too Many
Yes.
Cooks is using the same thing, using repetition, using loops, the way, I think modern audiences are getting kind of, backgrounds, a lot of things are being we're being drawn to that kind of imagery. So I'm more curious, like how much of it, maybe Buddy's the wrong example because it was somebody else's initial idea. But with when you're coming up with things, when you have to pitch for them and tell somebody your idea, are you just giving the whole story away? Are you trying to hold these kind of twist moments back? And how, just kind of how are you selling your work, I guess, is it's a weird, it might be too heady or nuts and boltsy a question, but.
I think in general, oh yeah, it's hard to no, and also I agree with you. Like I don't mean to put down the movie. I love the way it works and that you're in this powder keg and you're like it's almost unbearable. And then you can then when you get out, it's like, oh, you know, and the aspect ratio changes and the sound changes, you know, from stereo to 5.1. But you're so when I'm pitching, it's so many different ways I've tried to pitch it because I've done pitching on IP and stuff where I really you really kind of have to figure out beat by beat and you're just pitching every beat. But I think in general, the best luck I've had is something shorter, like 3, 4 pages, like. And then I'm just giving them the good stuff and enough to tell the story of the arcs. But I'm just jumping from the good stuff to the good stuff. So I don't know if that answers your
Well, it
question.
does.
It
And that
does.
probably means seeing one. I mean, with TV, it's a little different. Like if Buddy showed up on TV, it would almost play, you would, if you sat there long enough, you might think you're in the show, watching a real show. And Too Many Cooks use that same technique to its advantage, right? To kind of thread the narrative.
But like with Too Many Cooks, that was the pitch. I mean, that's how it started. I didn't have any, about Too Many Cooks, I was like, I want to do a sitcom show open where you start introducing people, and then it just doesn't stop, and then it goes for like a half hour. And that idea did it was kind of so sticky in the Adult Swim offices that I didn't even pitch it. My coworker was in an awkward moment with our boss at a party and Upfront's party in New York. And he just to fill the space, he was like, you know, Casper had this idea of to, and the boss was like, oh yeah, that's good. Let's do that.
Oh, that's funny.
So that worked out.
Well, I want to dig a little bit into the production. So I first want to talk about casting some of the celebrities to do voices. Like, how do you approach like Michael Shannon and say like, I want you to be a train or, you know, Clint Howard, I want you to play like a deranged cowboy with a puppet. And
That's
yeah,
probably
because
Patton Oswalt's best role.
yeah, Patton Oswalt as
No,
Strappy, the
I love Patton, but I love
backpack.
Stra that's my favorite character. I love Strappy.
I
Oh,
really
thank
liked the
you. I'm so glad.
mailbox.
Mailbox is great too.
The mail, I was genuinely hurt. I won't spoilers, but something happens to the mailbox and I was genuinely like, huh? Like that one hurt me. But yeah, talk a little bit about how you were casting this
It
out.
was okay, so it's interesting because I it's sort of newer to me. I have worked with some celebrities, but usually ones who like Adult Swim, but I've never had to do the real dance that people have to do. So it's kind of a case by case basis. For example, Michael Shannon, Low Spark, as I mentioned, did take Shelter. So they kind of had it in there to just get it in front of him. and say, hey, I think this would be cool if you did this. And he does bring such an intensity to it. It's And then with Kristen, her agent, God bless her, was really a fan of this script. So I had a very wonderful breakfast with Kristen to talk through it and how I wanted to do it. And it was one of those wonderful mornings. It's like, oh my God, I'm really I'm doing it. I'm in the business. Look at me. I'm gonna go have breakfast with Kristen Milioti. And then Pat and I have worked with off and on doing voice work for 30 years. And but I have not met him in person. I'm gonna finally meet him in person tomorrow night. So I'm excited about that. Because I've always worked remotely. And then oh yeah, Clint, it just felt right. Like it just and oh, and then Keegan-Michael Key, my God. As soon as someone had that idea, I'm like, oh yeah, that's perfect. And I love that he's such a nice person. It felt very good for that character. And I think there's that classic theory about people from quote nice cultures like Canada or the South, because they can't be aggressive like New Yorkers or people from New Jersey or whatever, will become passive aggressive and do all this other. They have other, has to come
My
out some.
God, you just summed up my mom.
Yeah. Well, I gotta tell you this. My parents are Southern, my mom's Southern, and they moved to New Jersey, and she played bridge. And she was amazed that fights would break out where they're just like, you fucking da 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 da. And then they would make up and it'd be over and they'd be friends again. And she goes, I love that because we're, down south, I have two friends that are bridge partners that have not spoken to each other for 10 years, except for the bids, Like, you know what I mean? Like they're just holding these grudges instead of getting it out. So I thought that was a good part to have for this character because I was utilizing that. Partly because who has more pressure to be nice than Barney,
Now, on the kids, I mean, like, they clearly got the assignment of what they were supposed to be doing, but they also, I mean, this is like a generation, a couple generations after Barney. So how did you kind of equate them? I mean, like, did you make them watch episodes of Barney and say, like, I want this type of acting, this like over the top? And then how about the horror scenes? Like, did they know going in that's what they were going to be doing?
Yes, as a parent myself, I'm probably overly sensitive to that. I working with the casting agent, I was like, I want to write the paragraph before the scenes that they're going to rehearse, audition rather, that this is a horror movie, this is the type of thing, please understand this. Like, so if you're not comfortable, don't totally understood, don't audition. I'm like, I don't know if I would let my kids do this. Although they're older now, but in terms of the watching Barney, yes, but these kids are very sophisticated and passionate. They kind of did research on their own and they would come in when we did the callbacks and they go, so do you want me to play this, a little more stiff, like a character on the show, or should I play it more naturalistic? And I'm like, oh my God, you're 10. I mean, and they were able, they would also go, okay, Casper, when we're shooting, like, for this scene, can I take a moment? Because I think my character should cry for this scene, so I need a little moment to do the sense mirror. I'm like, oh, sure, okay,
Were
it
you
was
casting
unbelievable.
out of Cleveland for these kids, or were these kids that
No,
you were
we
bringing
flew in.
in?
We flew in some kids. Like for example, Delaney. But some are. But like Delaney Quinn was in. She was the child, and If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You.
Oh, and is she your? She's the lead girl in yours? Because she's ex. I mean, it
Yeah, she
reminded
plays
me of
Freddie.
that line in Mulholland Drive where they say don't the direction is don't make it real until it gets real, and I always joke about that being bad direction but also like perfect direction. And in the movie, the performance, yes, Becca said it's over the top, it's over the top in the children's world. And then when she's fighting for her life and seeing, I won't say much more than that because I don't want to spoil it, but she's really quite incredible by the end. Like by the end I was like really like, wow, she is really giving a very nuanced, especially because she doesn't have remit her, all of her memory, the character's memories at time. And I thought, anyway, I was really, really impressed with something just with that much variation from children actors. I often think movies with this kind of tone, not to throw Ice Cream Man under the bus, but sometimes it can get just so general for the whole movie, a type of
Yeah.
performance. And I thought this had actual real pathos. So you really
Thank
did
you.
something right there.
Yeah, I was definitely trying to do that. And her face is so expressive, and yeah, she's just but yeah, but in a way, I also maybe you don't have to, but I identify with Buddy in a way of the sort of the frustrated parent when the kid is not doing, you do all this work and they're not into whatever you that feel. I don't know if you've ever had it where you take your kids to Disneyland and then for some reason they're like, I don't want to get out of the car. And I'm like, what are you talking about? We're just,
My kid did that yesterday. We're literally at Disneyland and we're there for like a half an hour. And granted, it's LA hot because LA is super hot right now. So it was like super hot at Disney yesterday. We're there for like a half an hour and he's like, can I use your phone? And I'm like, no, you cannot use my fucking phone, man. But it was the heat
Now
was started getting to him and he started getting all types of cranky and
for me it's, hey, we're in Rome. That's the Colosseum. Whatever. It's like, kill me now.
But well, you guys have probably younger kids than me. I will say there is light at the end of the tunnel where your jaw is gonna drop when they reminisce fondly about that Rome trip and go, remember that Rome trip and that Colosseum was so awesome. And I'm looking at my wife like they hated it. What
Oh
are
my
they doing?
God.
They're not remembering this correctly. They hated it.
I feel like every single time I travel, I'm like, we're traveling just so they can order like chicken nuggets in different places. And that's all we do is
Find the
just,
American restaurant in
yeah.
Paris. Where is it?
Yeah.
Quickly.
They will only eat chicken nuggets and pizza. There's nothing else. So, yeah.
And my older daughter finally, after years, we would get them like, we would order good pizzas from pizza places. We don't like that pizza. We want Papa John's. They finally no longer like Papa John's.
Okay, good.
We had
It
that change
happened.
up. My 13-year-old just finally told me she didn't like Domino's anymore. And that was a big deal because it's all she would eat for a long time. And I would rather eat like the box it came in. But no offense, Domino's. But
Yeah,
yeah,
no
some
offense,
offense.
Papa John's.
No.
If you want to fund my next movie or
Yeah,
business
same.
or
Domino's sponsor the
same
podcast.
analogy about pizza can be used for cinema with children. It's
Yes.
like you think they just want Papa John's, but maybe the kids want Backrooms now. I'm just saying they want to chew on
They're
Backrooms.
watching people watch Backrooms on YouTube. That's it.
Because we're nerds, and I know you're a cinephile, even from our preamble, I always am just curious because it's hard to tell what makes your work so interesting is it really feels original. Like, and not everyone's work feels original, and whatever that means to you. But like, I'm curious what some of your favorite horror films were, just like what they were coming up and what were, because obviously you love comedy, you love a lot of
Yeah.
different types of movies. But I'm personally just very curious about what kind of horror films
Well, I
they
was
did
kind
you.
of late to horror because I walked in on my parents watching The Omen when the governess says it's all for you, Damien, and jumps
Great
out
note.
and hangs herself. And I'm gonna throw, I love my dad. I'm gonna throw him slightly under the bus. I was like, what is that? And he goes, well, she just hanged herself because she's a follower of Satan of the, what do you mean hanged herself? He had to explain the concept of suicide to me because I didn't know what that was. And I'm like, okay, I don't want to watch any of that. So, and then, so sort of my gateway drugs back in, probably in a rough order, would have been Poltergeist. And then this was a big one, was American Werewolf in London, because that
Comedy.
was, I thought that was scary, but it was also hilarious because there's a scene in a theater where the guy who turns into the werewolf was in there, and then some of the people he had killed who were doomed to kind of roam the earth as zombies, and they were sort of some stiff British people with just horrible gashes all on their neck, and they're just, yes, hello, yes, that's us. It was so funny to me. I mean, John Landis, so that was an early bit of comedy and horror. And then Alien was the big one of like, because that was science fiction, so it kind of, and it also it had humor because it knocks you off guard so much when they're bitching about their bonuses. It's so good. It made it so naturalistic. It didn't feel like most science fiction. It felt like real people. And so those are the and
Well, tonal
then
shifts. They're all things with
yeah.
tonal shifts, like your
Oh
work,
yeah.
which I see.
Oh yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. And then later, and then it, even my like Exorcist and Texas Chainsaw I hadn't seen until the past 10 years.
Interesting.
And those both blew my mind, especially Texas Chainsaw
Which
is
is also kind
amazing.
of weirdly funny
It
in
is
its
in its
delirium.
moments.
And it's like it's gone so wild that at a certain point you almost laugh at the black red humor of it all.
But also it's, and it's so brightly lit. It's
Yeah.
and you know, there, it was, it's wild. Yeah. But also the ending is so true. Like this, she's doing what I like. She, what does she jump through two windows? Like,
Yeah,
yes, that's what you would do. Like
yeah.
get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
So I found that very believable. But there was one other movie I wanted to talk about. Oh, The Shining was a big topic for Buddy, because I think very early on, the producers kind of wanted Buddy to be more of an unknowable force, and that would be scarier. And I'm like, but he's in the show as this sort of father figure, so I don't think he can do that. I don't think we can play it like Michael Myers. And so I brought up the example of The Shining, who he is scary, but he is also pathetic. He is also absurd, and I would argue to a degree empathetic, and willing to put your empathy out that far. It takes some doing, but you know, a person who life did not go how they wanted, and they want so bad to be a successful writer, and you know, who can't relate to wanting to be more successful? So that was a big touchstone for this movie.
That tracks. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight, Casper. So where can we all see Buddy?
So Buddy is coming opening in theaters August 28th. Hopefully at a theater near you, opening wide, and I hope your listeners go see it and have a great time.
Go see it early
Amazing.
before you hear too much, because I do think it's the reaction to watching this with people is going to be half the
It's going to be
fun.
fantastic. Yeah, this is definitely like an opening weekend movie. So, thank you so much for joining us. And I cannot wait to see what you do next. Like, I am just sitting here waiting for your next film. So, get on that, please. So,
On it. I'm on it.
thank
I'll take, yes. Order received, Rebecca.
you all for listening to our show tonight. We will be back in 2 weeks with another fun, exciting show. I think we have a couple guests coming on that one. So yeah, hopefully it'll be a lot of different topics. And if you need some of us during the off week, please head over to our Patreon page, Deep Cuts, where we get really, really weird. That's where we put, if you love Demon Wind, there's a lot of Demon Winds over there. It's just all types of wild, older titles with, you know, face melting. So please find us over there. We are a cheap date at just $5 a month, which gets you 2 episodes of Deep Cut. But we'll be back in 2 weeks on this regular show with some other fine guests. Thank you all so much for listening, and happy start of your Halloween season.